This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Green and White, the weekly Argyle Life podcast. With us, we've been off for a little bit of a Christmas break. We did release our 2020 quiz. Sam, you came last, didn't you?
I may have came last, yes.
Sorry, spoilers.
We're very dubious.
So if you want to hear questions about Plymouth Argyle, hear me rattle off every character from Friends Season 1, hear Sam make an absolute prat of himself on that question, African countries, what, politics? I think there was a question about Ferris wheels in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. There was quite an impressive array of questions. If you're a trivia buff, really.
It was.
Play along.
It is quite long, so... Not so sure about that. It is quite long, so kudos to anyone who makes it past the half-hour mark, to be honest. But it's there if you want to listen to it. But anyhow, with us this week, we have got Sam.
Hello.
And we have got my quiz team partner, Finn.
Hello.
Obviously, God, it's been a while since the last football-related podcast. I think we haven't done one since Charlton, Oxford, Gillingham, Huddersfield under-23s.
Did we even do one after Milton Keynes or not?
Definitely, yeah, we did. You weren't in it.
Ah, all right, that'll be why then, yeah.
We did one, yeah. That's the last one we did. So there's a lot to cover, but So Argyle, fourth round. Finn?
Yeah, did what we needed to do, really. I think, you know, it was a good game. I think we benefited from the fact that, obviously, the heavy rotation at Huddersfield did, and... like you said, kind of they're under-23s really, but you've just got to take advantage of what's in front of you. And second half in particular, I think we really controlled the game and probably should have had more than the one goal we scored in that second half.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. We really dominated the game. We had a lot of good chances as well as our goals. Jeff Cotton Hardy had two, one after the other, started the second half. Ainton had a couple of good ones from headers, you know, quite aside from the three goals. I'm sure there's probably another one I'm forgetting. But yeah, it's quite a lot of good chances. Scored three goals. Huddersfield really didn't have a huge amount. There was that excellent Cooper save. But, you know, the corner from that one led to the goal. So you can't really class that as two separate chances, really. So, yeah, you can't really class that as two separate chances because you wouldn't have had one without the other.
The thing is great, that if great, someone like...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry. If someone like Buffon makes that save in that, like, so people are talking about that for like ages, but the thing is it like the goal just went straight after, so it kind of just people forgot about it, I think.
Yeah, but it's disappointing. I think that the kind of cliche of if you know, very big player did that, then it would be raved about. It may be a little bit overused, but I think that instance, it probably is true. It was an incredible reaction save. It was a real quick, you know, movement of his body, very quick reaction, and palmed it over for a corner as well. Often with those, you see them just kind of palm it back out, but he did well to actually direct where he palmed it over for a corner kick. Which, you know, admittedly we did then concede from, but that's not his fault. So, yeah, really, really good save.
It was ourselves. Because I'm pretty certain you described that as his best save for Argyle, and to be honest, I'm not sure I dispute that. And no, which was extra gutting because by the time I'd read that message, we were losing. So
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think it was his best save for Argyle. He has made a lot of good saves. What I think he's not really done up to yesterday was make one of those absolutely breathtaking saves that you would expect the keeper to have no right to save. And that one yesterday, you know, at least he's made a couple, maybe on the borderline of that, but none that are really obviously that. But that one yesterday was that was very much in that ballpark. It was in that category of, you know, how on earth to save that. It was a really, really good, really quick stop from a keeper who is seemingly developing in confidence every game. I think what we did here, because the FA player is, with all due respect to iFollow, significantly better in terms of kind of sound quality and picture quality than the iFollow, is we heard the players a lot more yesterday than we normally do. And Cooper was actually really vocal. It's become a bit of a question mark about him. Is he vocal enough as a keeper? And whilst I accept he may well have improved as the season's gone on, you know, the fact he was vocal yesterday doesn't mean he's always been vocal. I get that. But certainly in yesterday's game, he was very vocal, very leading, very commanding. We heard his slightly frustrated reaction to the second goal. But yeah, he was commanding and vocal as well as having a good game.
Yeah, I agree.
I had it on mute, so I wasn't hearing all this afterwards.
That one lost on Nick then.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, was he vocal during or after? Because I know that with the goal, for example, he was being vocal after, but I didn't hear him.
No, that
I think I played him within him.
To be honest, that was one example. He was vocal during as well, I would say.
Okay.
On keeper, like, people, you know, he's had some mistakes this season and probably some goals you should have saved, but by and large he's been pretty good. And I honestly think that kind of he doesn't communicate enough himself is quite a weak argument, really, because, you know, like Sam said, he might have improved as the season's gone on, but I saw no issue with his communication yesterday. And actually, like, sure, like, communication helps with individual errors, but everyone's just been making individual errors. So there's not much that, you know.
If you want a classic example of where communication is vital, go back and watch that second goal. And when I say watch it, I mean watch it about five or six times. But each time, rather than watching the player carrying the ball, watch all of the individual defenders.
Yeah.
And watch an example of why communication is absolutely vital for any defending team. Because it is a cliche, but it's true. You don't defend as an individual. You do every now and then. Take Aimson, for example, last ditch tackle against MK Dons. But by and large, you defend as a team. And you look at the miscommunication between Mayer and Grant. Mayer thinks Grant's got the player covered. Grant thinks Mayer has. Both stop. He runs off. No one goes out to press him. None of the midfielders shouting, "You press it." You know, everyone is just doing their own thing. They're defending as individuals. And that gives this player a ridiculous amount of time and space right on the edge of the area. It was warning signs before the shot was even taken. And credit to him, it's an absolutely fantastic shot. Just because he's got the shot off there does not mean he's going to score. But if you want a classic example of why communication is arguably one of the most important traits ahead of actually being able to make tackles, or being a top tackler, rather. I mean, obviously, you need to be able to tackle the ball. But obviously, you know, why communication is one of the most underrated values when you're talking about defending, that's a perfect example of it. And Cooper has got a role to play in that. And for my money, he hasn't been vocal enough, but it's obviously very hard to tell based around iFollow, so you have to caveat it around that. Like, when Fraser got into the stadium, he sort of correlated with that opinion, but again, one person hears things and sees things in a different way to another.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do agree. I think the individual errors just mean, like, That was a series of individual errors by lots of players. But what I mean is, like, we've had, you know, games where an individual error has been done by Poku or done by Aimson or done by Canavan or done by Watts. And, yeah, that was more systematic. I mean, Connor Grant, you know, you should just, first and foremost, just close down your man, isn't it, I guess?
It's fine for Conor Grant to drop off if Mayer's going to pick him up. You know, there's nothing, that's just zonal defending.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, hell, you can set that up on FIFA, and I presume on Football Manager, I never played it, but, you know, that's just zonal defending. But the key is, you know, you have to be on the same wavelength. But you're right in that there were a heinous amount of individual errors that don't, for the, you know, the majority of it doesn't come down to communication. That's just players not doing what they're supposed to.
Yeah.
But, then you also do have a chunk of goals that are related to communication.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, that's one of my main it is a young and it's very inexperienced spine when you're looking at for what we had for the majority of that awful run was Cooper, Opoku ahead of him, Fauna ahead of him. I mean, let's face it, Danny Mayer's not the most vocal, nor I imagine is Kamara. And, you know, that's your spine for the majority of these games.
I mean, we talked about playing Huddersfield under-23s yesterday, but how many of our goals starting 11 was actually over the age of 23 yesterday?
Valid point, because Ryan Lowe points us out a couple of times, you know, in recent weeks, and you think, say you hold a core of this team together, say Watts, who started every game, and get him on loan for some reason next season, then you're looking at, obviously, Cooper's his first full season, Jeffcott, first full season, really with us. Hardy's not that, you know, Hardy's what, 23, 24?
Yeah.
Kamara,
yeah,
23?
Yeah.
Cooper's not that old. He's got a lot of experience, despite his years, but he's not that old. Connor Grant, how many... He's probably going to make more appearances this season than he has any other.
He's 25, but when he's one of the older players in the team, that's really saying something, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, even Ameson, I don't think this will probably be the second time in his career that he's played more than started more than 40 games.
Yeah,
I don't think he ever did.
Assuming you don't get another Ameson injury. That's not.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah. Okay, Grant. But you see what I mean? There is an awful lot of inexperience here, particularly in that core. You know, in that spine.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there is. And I think it's a bit of a tough one because looking on to Opoku. Now, Opoku yesterday, good game. Very good, very good game, even, like I could say. But I'd actually even say, in terms of individually what he did and didn't do, probably the best of the three defenders yesterday. Opoku was very good. But is it, again, a case that we are lacking organisation without Canavan in there? And it's a harsh man who says to Opoku, right, you know, you're dropped now for the game against Crewe at the weekend, but I feel it might be the right thing to do because as much as he did have a good game individually, he didn't offer quite that same communication and organisation that Canavan does. So I think you've probably got a problem again.
See, I'm not completely sure. And you know, credit to Jerome Perk. I thought he had a very good game yesterday too. But I didn't know why Canavan was kind of...
Rest him, it's the FA Cup. No. I was all for it. I said to you before the game, Sam, I was like, make a few changes. I want Ben Reeves in. You keep saying, Finn, what did Reeves do?
Well, I don't know.
Is it a Marcel Sipe situation?
I don't think that... I don't think that Scott Whitten's ever played central defensive midfield in his career.
I bet he has once or twice, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, at least Reeves is a central midfielder. I mean, come on, like, he's a good footballer. It's like, you know, not to discredit Whitten, like, but he's just a better passer of the ball than Whitten, first and foremost.
Most I do agree with it. That may not be the best time to make that argument. After that, Savvy-esque pass by Scott
Whitten. Yeah, it's
Savvy ball.
Yeah.
Unbelievable ball.
It looked very clunky there for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then just out of nowhere, this inch-perfect pass.
Tell you what, though. I reckon if he tried it 100 times again, he couldn't do it again, could he?
He could probably do it, maybe not quite as well as that, though.
It's one of those, you know, when you have, like, one of those challenges where you, where, like, you see on Soccer AM and they're, like, trying to, like, pass the ball from, like, 25 yards into a bin or something like that.
Ian Holloway.
Yeah, it's like one of those.
I presume you saw that.
Yeah.
I may be being uncharitable. I think he's just scooped it and he's got lucky. Maybe I could be totally wrong. I think he's just completely scooped it and it's landed in quite a nice place. Is that hard to agree?
Passing isn't that bad. Like, he hits some aimless ones down the line, but to be honest, so does Ameson. I bet the only reason Watts doesn't is because he's got Mayer endlessly dropping off to pick it up.
Yeah, I do agree. But I think the kind of point on Reeves is just that, I don't know. I don't know what he's done. I would like to see him a bit more, really.
Same, but like I say, I'm all for bringing a poker in. That's a perfect example of rotation. You've taken a couple of players out to get them rested, you know, to give them a break. I imagine McLeod's case is actually injured rather than rested, because obviously he came off against Gillingham, right?
Yeah.
God, it feels like ages back since that. So I imagine he's injured rather than being rested. But nevertheless, this idea that you need to be absolute full strength for a cup game, I'm all for making one or two changes.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, on Opoku, I was actually really impressed with the way that he brought the ball out of the fence yesterday. Particularly the second goal, he basically started that and kept the ball going, and then we scored.
I agree,
I agree.
I
actually did it for the second as well, I think. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say that. Whilst I don't disagree, that's never been his weakness, has it? He's always had a bit of quality on the ball. He's always had a little bit of something about him. But his weakness was the defensive errors, switching off, losing his man, which he didn't do. He pretty much didn't do at all yesterday. And maybe
two to be fair, just coming on that, it's not like he's the only one there. Let's not hold on against him, because for a 4 or 5 6 week period, you couldn't say that. I bet you can. You know, that was the same of all of them.
Yeah, you could, but maybe him slightly more than others, bar Wootton. But listen, he didn't do that at all yesterday, was what I was going on to say. And the only question mark you can hold is the communication. So I would bring Canavan back in for the Crewe game. But I think, I don't know, I think with Ryan Lowe, he might think go unchanged after that game, possibly.
You know what really pleased me? And this is since we last podcast we had. I was either thinking it or I said it, was that I really wanted to see Kamara improve. That Kamara had improved since when we signed him. This idea that he was, you know, a rough diamond, and, you know, he's still quite young, and just one good season and we can start making a lot of money on him in the future. And then that was at the start of the season to roughly, a month or so back. Then I remember, I'm pretty certain I said it in the last podcast after MK Dons, was I really wanted to see him improve his attacking output, and that I didn't really see creativity and his finishing was poor. And literally, the three games since then, much, much better. Charlton less so, but brilliant finish against Oxford.
Yep.
Yeah, good performance against Gilliam, and then I gave him out of the match for yesterday. For me, I know you went for Mayor, Sam, but for me,
Kamara was very good. Yeah, completely.
Yeah, no, I know you don't dispute that. Very good. Yeah. I loved his finish. Sarsvajesk was how Fraser described it. He's right. It's a brilliantly timed run. That's what we need. You know, so many crosses that miss both of the strikers, and there's no one following up, and he's just making that perfect run, because we've got two strikers, they're going to draw the two centre-backs. And so when Kamara picks it up, there's so much space. It's a brilliant touch controller and a brilliant finish. And it was outstanding finish. And, of course, good game.
I think he's able to, you know, inside the box, in terms of when the ball's presented to him like that. I know it's a completely different level of football, but I remember, I think before he went to Crawley, played for Dulwich Hamlet after being released by Barnsley, I think. Mm-hmm. And he basically, I think, played as like an attacking midfielder, and, you know, scored quite a few goals. I think he scored something like 6 or 7 at least in like a 15 game spell that he had.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to judge too much from that low level, but he's clearly got goals in him, because he gets in the right positions and he's not confident to have a shot. It's just the finishing. But like we say, players improve, and one strength for Ryan Lowe, whilst I think we can all get a bit baffled by occasional decisions he makes, is that he does improve players. He's improved Kamara as a player, certainly improved Jeffcott as a player, and probably many more, Conor Grant, many more we could name as well. So he does definitely improve players. So I'm
at least going forward, they improve. Not so sure going back.
Yeah, that is the issue. Yeah. I think
Kamara. You know, his best attributes is, in terms of like what he is naturally good at, is pressing people, getting the ball off them, and then running forward. But yeah, like, I mean, Nick said, really, it's just great to see him. You know, well, he is performing the Sarsavić role at the moment, isn't he? And you know, that's really good to see.
Yeah, I think
slightly better passing.
I'm going to say it. I think I've said it all season, and maybe Nick will say, you know, even if I'm right now, I was wrong earlier in the season. I think he's a better version of Sarsavić, better passing, definitely, probably even better carrying with the ball, and probably even more energetic. The only thing that was up until recently slightly weaker was the finishing, but now he's got those two goals out of a sudden. His non-penalty output is looking to be on a par with Sarsavić, so I think he's a better version of Sarsavić. Maybe even certainly will have a better career than Sarsavić. I think he'll play Championship, Kamara, for sure. A very, very good young player, and I think, like you say, there's a potential that he can either preferably take us up there, or if not, certainly make a bit of money off him. So yeah, a very, very, another very good game from a player who's rapidly becoming a fan favourite, and dare I say it, maybe a player of the season contender.
Well, I think that's a bit much early on, albeit I can see him, he's popular, therefore he might be player of the season contender. Jeff Scott's surely going to win it, but this is probably too early for that.
Jeff Scott all day long, but yeah.
Yeah, very much summarised what my, you know, what my stance is going to be there, which is that you were, up until about 3 or 4 weeks back, there's no doubt I would have taken Sarsavić in this team ahead of Kamara. Not necessarily because Sarsavić is better in all areas, but Sarsavić is definitely efficient in this style of formation in terms of getting the ball in the back of the net, getting into good attacking positions, and is really what we're lacking. And it's been good to see that has returned. Sorry, I'm just checking Sarcevic because I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So what? Sarcevic scored 11 last season, 5 penalties. So we got 5 open play goals. That would be what? Colchester. Okay, never mind. So he got 5 last season, but I think every season before that was 3, wasn't it? So yeah, he must. He's basically at the Sarcevic quota.
Yeah, because he's scored 3 now, isn't he?
Yep.
We've more than half the season yet to come. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One against Dorian. Yeah, 3 the year before that. Intriguing. Yeah, sorry. I just thought I'd double check that one. But yeah, like I say, if he can kick on and continue to kick on, fantastic. I want to hear him. Well, yeah, I was going to say I want to hear him be more vocal, so I just want to hear him more. Because I still think we're missing unless McLeod's playing, we're missing a leader, particularly a defensive leader in midfield. Mayer's not exactly the most vocal, and he's also, I mean, Mayer's fine defensively, but when you've got such an offensive setup and such as a porous back, you know, defense as a whole team, not just the defenders, but a porous defense, you need more communication. So that'd be great because he's clearly got the know-how and the positioning. He's got to be able to communicate that to players around him more.
Yeah. I'd go with that. I'd go with that, but I think he is slowly improving it in a lot of ways. I feel we want to...
No, quickly improving.
Yeah, well, yeah, quickly improving, actually, yeah, fair point. I feel we want to actually really pay a bit of credit to Hardy, because since Milton Keynes' game, what a huge improvement.
Yes.
Obviously, not just the fact that he's now scoring more goals, he scored 2 goals in 5 games after 1 in about, 15 before that, but the fact that he's now actually, so not only a rapid increase in goals, but playing much, much better in general play. Not that he was ever all that bad in general play, even on his dry run, but now he's much better in general play, creating loads, running loads, stretching defenders. Defenders don't know how to handle him. Just play a really, really, really good run of games from him. And among the goals as well.
Two goals in 5 games.
So 5 goal involvements in 5 games, which is absolutely not at all.
Joint top assister with Conor Grant, I believe.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. So very, very good positive signs from him. Really hitting top form now. And although Frank Nouvelle did have an absolutely fantastic...
That was where I was going to go before you went to Hardy. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, it was an absolutely fantastic... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just watching... I'm watching Newport versus Brighton on my iPad on mute. I do apologise. Newport very nearly scored, but it was cleared off the line by Ben White. But anyway, yeah... Anyway, yeah, absolutely fantastic time wasting from Nouvelle and Mayer down in the corner flag. In the last
Nouvelle in particular.
Nouvelle in particular, yeah. Just didn't.
That was men against boys.
He was holding 3 of them off at one point. It was hilarious. It was like, I felt sorry for the Huddersfield players.
We genuinely wasted about 2 minutes. I mean, maybe you should question whether we should be wasting time against what was essentially Huddersfield's under-23s. But it's the right thing to do. I got no complaints. And it was genuinely hilarious to watch, mostly because it was, because it wasn't us on the receiving end of it. It's incredibly frustrating the other way around, but B, it was just an amusing spectacle.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. And it was really professional game management as well, throughout. And another, again, we seem to be mostly showering praise across the team because it was a very good performance. We won 3-2, should have been more. Another very good display from Conor Grant, a left wing back, with the admittedly sad news that George Cooper is now going to miss the whole season through his injury, which is a great shame. Never really got going this season. Hopefully he'll come back stronger next season. But it's news that's, made a lot less bad than it might have been by the Conor Grant. Excellent runner performance. And certainly going forward, we've seen that left wing back, he was involved in the third goal, involved in a lot of other good opportunities, wasn't he, second half?
Ipswich assist.
Oh, yeah, assist against Ipswich, absolutely.
Gillingham assist,
and obviously involved in the third goal, not the assist, but he had the pass for the assist. And not only that, but he just general involvement in a lot of good chances. So still some work to be done defensively, but he's getting there defensively. I think his second half defensively yesterday was a lot better than his first half defensively. So again, turning into a very good wing back again. I don't know if the listeners know this, me and Nick had a bet at the start of the season that if Conor Grant played more than... I've always been a big advocate of Conor Grant, as long-term listeners will know. I bet that if if he played more than, I think it was 1,300 minutes or 1,350 minutes, something of that kind, if he played more than that total of minutes, I would win. And if he played less, Nick would win. And I think I've probably already won, or if not, I'm certainly very close to it. So please, Connor, if I've not won, just don't get a long-term injury anytime soon for the sake of the team as well. We can't have two left wing backs out injured. But yeah, another good game from Connor Grant. Deserves a bit of praise, I think.
Yeah, I thought he had a good game. And for as much as, like, George Kiper, I mean, he's, I think I made a comment about Kiper's delivery, that he puts, you know, when he delivers, when he has a good game with with his delivery, there's not many, I don't think there's any in the division that can really, really live up to that kind of quality. But in terms of consistency, Connor Grant always puts the ball in a good area. And, you know, we need someone, the role that the left wing back plays in our team, we need someone who delivers the ball. And I think Connor Grant, you could argue that he's on par, if not just below Kiper, in terms of quality of delivery consistently anyway.
Kiper last season better than Connor Grant this season, but Kiper just hasn't been as good this season as he was last season.
Yeah.
Simple as that for me. And you're right, it's purely down to, if Kiper... I think Kiper had a better season, or had to have been better rather than some people have realised. But at the same time, you know, he still wasn't that fantastic. But he wasn't helped by constant COVID and injury, and now this big injury. It was very stop-start for him. Yeah. And you know what? If he comes back and just being a bit more careful with his crossing, because let's face it, there are too many over here, too many under hit. And you're right, in that right now, Connor Grant, for me, isn't doing as much as... George Kiper would do on his best day last season, and that doesn't really matter right now because A, Cooper's injured, but B, his crossing wasn't as up to par as it should have been. And if Conor Grant can continue delivering from the left, fantastic. Slight downgrade on George Kiper, but that's no slight on him for me.
Yeah, and probably an upgrade.
I mean, if you'd told me at the start of the season that we'd be just talking about Conor Grant as just a minor slight downgrade on George Kiper, you'd take that all day long, because let's face it, Conor Grant was exactly flavour of the month going into this season, and he's probably turned it around.
Except for me, of course, but you're quite right.
Yeah.
And I think whilst you're right in saying he has a slight downgrade on Kiper, and his crossing isn't as good as Cooper's best day last season, I think this season he's been better than Kiper in that role, and it's certainly better than Cooper's worst day. He's more kind of solidly 7 or 8 out of 10, whereas Kiper can be a 9 or a 10 out of 10, but he can also, in terms of crossing at least, but Cooper's crossing can be a 9 or a 10 out of 10, but it can also be a 3 or 4 out of 10, whereas Conor Grant's crossing is more consistently a 7 or 8 out of 10, so it does at least give that, you know, lower baseline at least, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, what you
so many numbers.
What you don't get with Conor Grant, and this can be a positive or a negative depending on who you're playing, is Kiper almost exclusively always goes for those early hit balls down the line or in behind the defence because he can hit those. And we saw, I think, against Stevenage, he did it against Scunthorpe. He played an absolute blind ball to Byron Moore.
Yeah, you're right.
Sometimes that can be frustrating because they're over hit and it's like, why do you keep going for it? But it's sort of, I guess, law of averages for him.
It worked with Hardy as well. Like, I remember, I think it was one of the last goals we scored as the opening goal against Macclesfield, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. And it'd be nice if Conor Grant could add. There's so many little things like that Conor Grant can pick up from Kiper. So we mentioned a couple of weeks back was the right foot crossing. Kiper really developed that cut inside right foot cross when, you know, teams when defenders were really keen on showing him inside, he could.
Yeah, but we'd also got to say that he's literally playing so is Kiper really, but he's probably had less practice at left wing back than Kiper has. Well, certainly at the moment, because he played well most of the point until Kiper got injured. Really, he'd been playing in centre midfield, and then a couple of games for Adams when we couldn't find a left back.
I was going to bring up set piece defending, but screw it, let's have a positive podcast. What's the point? So what else have we got to be positive about?
We're in the fourth round. In the fourth round for the first time since 2008.
Oh yeah, of course. Who do you think we'll get? Who do you want gone? What kind of draw? I think we did this last time. What draw do you want?
So I would take one of two. I would, but preferably not anything in between. I would take either a big tie against a big, or at least mid-ish Premier League team, because I think the players deserve it after, you know, all the hard work in the first three rounds, and it will be a good payday for the club. Even if fans can't go, it'll mean a bigger television fee, you know, merchandise, maybe sales, so on and so forth. If that's not possible, I'd like a home game against Chorley, Cheltenham or Crawley, just because I think that's those are probably the three most winnable games in the hat. I don't really want anything in between. I know that, you know, the games we have won in rounds 1, 2 and 3 have all been something in between. They've all been games against teams better than us, who, due to a mixture of rotation and us being good on those days, we have won against, obviously, Charlton, Lincoln and Huddersfield. So ideally not something in between, but if it is something in between, you know, that's what we've had the last three times. It's not to say we can't do it. So I'm relatively philosophical, whoever we get. I think the most Argyle Sod's Law outcome would be, because let's not forget the fourth and fifth round are being drawn at the same time. It would be something like Argyle at home to Blackpool, but the winner plays the winner of, you know, Man City against Man United or something like that. Yeah, exactly. So that would be a very, very nerve-wracking outcome, but we'll see. We should see. I still
remember Garita's penalty against Newport.
Yeah.
Don't remind me, please.
Furious swearing, like, oh.
I mean, it's funny now because Kerry stuck one in the corner, but at the time,
I remember.
Goodwillie wanted a second penalty, didn't he?
Yeah, Kerry's like, no, we've had our fun.
We've had our fun, exactly. I didn't think he'd let Garita take the first one, but there
no, save. Oh, God, I didn't.
And then he tapped him when it hit the post.
Oh, dear. And then, okay, right, yeah, like I say, that would be awful if we get a big tie. And let's face it, the odds of us getting a big tie for round five, pretty big. There's some big clubs left in it.
Yeah.
You don't often have them drawn together, so it is kind of quite likely that we'll be drawn against
Or the preemptive round five, it's quite likely we'll get somewhere in that there will be a big team, yes.
Yeah, because there'll be so few clubs left by that point. I mean, we're talking winners that get through to the quarterfinal.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's what I would say. I mean, I've said said today that I think that I'd like a favourable tie round four, because I think there's still a few teams that we could get in there, particularly Cheltenham won in the end, didn't they, against Mansfield?
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate Cheltenham, though.
No, I'm not. By what I mean, last season. No, especially, no, I mean, away is a different thing, which is why I wouldn't take Chorley away. I would be very nervous about that.
Absolutely agree.
And because I actually think they can cause us a lot of problems. I mean, I don't know their team at all, really, but I know that non-league teams tend to be more physical. And when
did you watch the highlights of them versus,
I watched it live. Derby, that's it. They battered Derby. Didn't they really?
To be fair, Derby's under 23s.
Yeah,
but at the same time, threat after threat after threat from set pieces.
Yeah, and
that does happen with confidence if we get drawn away to Chorley. No, it doesn't.
No. So I would personally, because my family are Man United fans. I'd quite like Man United just for that big tie. But if not, then someone favourable in the fourth round that we can beat, and then maybe you're thinking maybe a Championship side and that we could go away and somehow beat, and then maybe get in the quarterfinals. But maybe that's, you know, we can dream, can't we?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah. My worry is that we get a tie that we could win. It's like a Huddersfield kind of team who would be quite likely to rotate because the FA Cup's not their priority. They've got half an eye on playoffs or whatever, or avoiding relegation. But then we get an FA Cup draw for the fifth round against said big team. And all of a sudden, well, we're not resting all our players, are we? We want the big tie.
Yeah.
And that by drawing them together means that we end up playing a side at full strength, but at the same time, doesn't mean you can't win it. Blackburn relatively battered Doncaster yesterday. Christian Walton let one slip between his hands, and then Blackburn, I'm not sure who it was, might have been Armstrong, missed a tap in from 2 yards against an open goal. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not that it can't be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm very positive. There are just a couple of little kinks still, like the set piece defending and like the fact of lack of organisation for the second goal. It wasn't a flawless performance, but I think it was certainly one of the better performances of the season. I'd like to point out now that is in all competitions, we've won two games away from home this season, and they are both in the same competition, both in the FA Cup. And that is now, in fairness, in all competitions, two games unbeaten away from home. The draw at Charlton and then the win at Huddersfield. So that is, small
improvement. Straws to clutch at.
What was that?
Straws to clutch at.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think the first league away win is hopefully not too far away. Maybe not our next game because that's Sunderland. And
how long have you been saying that, Sam?
What I would say, Nick, is previously I've said it
when
on the basis of kind of
more out of
previously,
I mean,
I've kind
thought
of said,
we'd win our way at Wigan and then that would be it.
We should have.
Yeah.
We should have, absolutely, on the balance of play, yeah. But it's a monkey to get off our back, without a shadow of a doubt. But I'm hopeful it will come. Obviously, we've got Crewe at home next, which will be, in paper, quite a tough one. They are on good form. They are breaking up towards the playoff race. But they are very much a side who are better at home than they are away. And obviously, so are we. So, I'm quietly confident about that one. And then it'd be good just to kind of pull away without any categorical doubt that we're not on a relegation fight, because I want to enjoy this cup run without kind of looking over our shoulders to how it all potentially damaged the league, which kind of in the famous star for older listeners may remember, obviously I don't remember, but I've read up on it, the 1984 cup run, we were actually in a relegation fight that whole season to go down from this league into the bottom league, obviously, League Two is now Division Four as it was then, which would have been a really huge thing for Argyle, because at that point we'd never been in the bottom tier. So that would have been our first ever relegation into the bottom tier. And we were kind of fighting relegation all season whilst going through that cup run. So, which probably would have taken a little bit of the enjoyment off it. So it would be good to have if we did, dreaming progress into last 16 quarterfinals, God knows, maybe even the semi-finals again, like in 84. It'd be good to do that without having that league monkey on our back to worry about, I suppose. So that would be very good if we can just, even if we're nowhere near the top six, at least not be anywhere near the bottom four,
I just want to touch on very quickly, when you just mentioned the league there. We are now in the January transfer window and we haven't signed anybody yet. But I was just querying, do you think we sign anybody this week? I think I was expecting Jack Ruddy not to sign a new contract. And obviously Timmy Abraham's left and possibly Jerome Opoku. I was expecting him to return, but now now that George Cooper's out and he can play left wing back, I don't really want Byron Moore covering both sides if we can do that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's worth extending Opoku as long as Fulham are on the understanding that he is back up effectively first and foremost. He's not going to get a guaranteed start every week. He has to earn his place in the team. So I think I'd be okay with extending Opoku. He has had some absolute stinker games for us, but so have a lot of others. And I think he did do well yesterday. He can cover left wing back in the lack of George Cooper being there. So yeah, I'd be fine with us extending Opoku. I'm going to have a little moan about. I know that we're kind of dragging on in time. But I'm going to have a little moan about Fauna. I think he was the weak link again yesterday, I'm afraid to say. I think he lets the game pass him by too much. I do not rate him as a defensive midfielder. He's got some ability on the ball. He's even got some ability in the tackle, but his understanding of positional sense and space on the pitch is non-existent. He's got no idea where he's meant to be. Often don't really know what he's meant to be doing, I feel, which is a bit of a shame. I feel that our first target, if McLeod is likely to be out for any length of time, or even if he's not, because he is injury prone, and even if he's not now, he could be out for a length of time. Therefore, priority should be to sign a DM, I think, because Fauna just worries me a lot when he's trying to defend, and I don't think that's sadly going to change this season.
Scathing.
I'm not. Am I wrong though?
I didn't know anything. He had the best game yesterday. You know what's kind of infuriating is he's got a good range of passing. He just seems off far too conservative unless there's open space ahead of him,
I agree. It's a good pass.
Not all the time. Mm. And sometimes he decides to give me a heart attack when under intense pressure, but it seems like there's nowhere in between. Either it's only when there's open space or he's under a ridiculous amount of pressure that he'll try and do something. Otherwise, it's a little bit of pressure turn back pass. Not, and obviously that's a, over simplification, but still, maybe it's just because I'm feeling it because of yesterday, and I thought we could have done more yesterday. Hard to know.
I think he'd be better in the more advanced CM role, but the trouble is, we're not going to play there because
he's got the creativity to play there. Mm. He hasn't got the creativity to play there.
But like you said, he can
passing. Passing is not the same. Passing is not the same as being creative.
Yeah.
Right. To be creative is more than anything about seeing said space.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, if he's going to start scoring from 30 yards every game, then he would play there. And let's face it, he looks like one of our best distance shooters right now because he's probably had more good shots from distance bar on a ground than anyone else.
Seeing said space, i.e. Ben Reeves, for example.
Yeah. Finn's going to bang the drum for Ben Reeves like I did for Connor Grant. Let's hope it has a similarly good outcome. Yeah. But, you know, you wouldn't, bar the odd rotation here and there, you wouldn't put him in above Camara or Mayer at the moment, would you? So he'll have to wait his chance for an injury or a drop.
Ray Oxford, I would have put him in ahead of Camara, but I mean, you can hardly drop him when Camara suddenly found, you know, that goal-scoring touch, at least for now. On Finn's point, there haven't been... So we talk about... I think impatience is the word I'd use. A lot of people are quite impatient for transfers. There haven't been many so far. And let's face it, there's an added complication. I mean, I'm not going to go into much detail because we mentioned already, but obviously with the wage cap, you know, you often need, then Ryan Lowe said, you need to let someone go in order to bring someone in, which means that we need to have a buyer or be willing to pay to end the contract of a player in theory in order to bring someone else in. So it's not as simple as identifying a target like in normal seasons.
Yeah.
It's also about being able to make that wage space. And I mean, who's come in? I mean, Carl Winchester to Sunderland, that's one. Gillingham made a loan signing. MK Dons made a loan. So we're talking like under 23 players they're making loan signings of. I mean, Swindon brought in Kieran Freeman.
There's not a lot of activity going around, is there?
Like you say. There really isn't because...
I'm not 100% expecting anybody to come in. I just think we need somebody, and this is the only chance between now and the end of the season that we're going to have the ring.
Well, it's not true. There's loads of free transfers.
Barring free agents, yeah.
But when, you know, because of the wage cap, when, you know, your situation in 2 months' time is going to be no different. Now,
well, like I say, yeah, you're right there, but at the same time, you can still pay to cancel someone's contract at any point.
Yeah.
The question is, do you do it? Yeah. But there are some good players out there. I'm writing something up now on who's available loan and transfer wise. It's not majorly comprehensive, but still, there's some decent players out there. It's just about making the space, and in some cases, taking the risk.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I think that's us. So all that's left is predictions against Crewe. Finn.
Crewe are a decent side. I think when we played them last time, we weren't in our best run of form. But I think we can beat them at home. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win.
Sam?
As long as we don't try any more ridiculous 4-2-3-1 nonsense with Scott Wootton at right back like we did last time we played Crewe, then I'll agree with Finn. I'm going to say 2-1 win.
Oh, God. Scott Wootton, utility player. He's played centre of... defense, right? Him and Opoku, really, because he's played center of defense, he's played the right of defense, he's obviously defensive mid and right back. Crikey. I'll go for a 2-1 win. We all 2-1 wins.
Unanimity on the podcast. Prediction is the first time for everything.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, anyhow, that's it. That's
I can't remember. Thank you. It won't be a 2-1 win then. Sorry, go on.
So yeah, that's green and white. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you have a lovely week, and looking forward to the FA Cup fourth and fifth round draw on Monday. So today, when you're probably listening to it, or yesterday. So this has been Green and White. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.